life's blood of the world economy is trade. And trade means jobs, probably your job. But what happens if this trade that really fuels world economies ever stops? Jobs will be lost, prices will rise, economies will tumble, and the world will enter an era of trade wars. It would be the most incredible shock that had ever occurred to a civilized people if almost overnight this fabulous economy in which we find ourselves could come splitting apart and we could revert to a virtual barter system, a barter society where someone is swapping with someone for maybe a gallon of gas for a dozen eggs instead of even using what we call money. But in a world very close to home and in the not very distant future, we may find ourselves embroiled in a cauldron of economic problems which could very likely lead to just that situation. All-out trade war, and trade war means political problems, and that leads toward military conflict. Trade has become a hot item recently in world news. Political leaders like President Carter's Special Trade Representative Robert Strauss and Japanese Prime Minister Takeo Fukuda have voiced their concern that pressures for trade barriers, embargoes, sanctions, and protectionism could rip apart the economic fabric of our sophisticated world. For example, a senior member of Japan's ruling Liberal Democratic Party has recently warned that Japan's relations with the United States have worsened to the extent that, given a similar situation in the distant past, it could have precipitated a war. Forces are now building which could lead to eventual world economic depression, a vast depression making the one of 1929 and the early 30s look like a Sunday school picnic by comparison. The common denominator of international prosperity is jobs. And American jobs are being lost because of cheap imports. According to Saul Chaikin, for example, president of the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, imports have cost almost 300,000 jobs over the last decade in the clothing and textile industry alone. Or take the steel industry. Steel imports have increased by almost 50% since 1975 and captured 20% of the United States market. Partly as a result, more than 60,000 workers have been thrown out of their jobs over the past 1 year. Steel companies are complaining that foreign competition has eroded profits, forcing plant closings and layoffs. Industry specialists believe that if imports were to capture another 10 percentage points in the United States market, an additional 96,000 jobs would go down the drain. In shoes and television sets, the story is much the same. As a consequence, members of the United States Congress are coming under increased pressure to do something about the loss of jobs due to the impact of lower-cost imported goods. American politics is instead seeing a renewed drive for a whole grab bag of tariffs and import quotas, and the impatience is growing. Shoes, steel, textiles, television sets, sugar, the list is long and the pressure is intense. So while President Carter remains officially committed to furthering free trade and a new round of tariff cuts in the next GATT talks, pressures to go the opposite direction in Congress are building up a pretty good head of steam. According to one congressman, and I quote, "Constituencies aren't built on free trade. They're built on protectionism," end of quote. The benefits of free trade are diffuse and difficult to tally. The need for protection is often crystal clear. The closing of a shoe factory, for example, can send both union leaders and industry representatives rushing off to Washington for an emergency meeting with the area congressman. But it's the human cost of cheap foreign import competition which is often the most telling. Many U.S. industries are threatened by imports. In the last 10 years, shoe imports have gone up about 800%. Automobiles over 600%. TV sets, 600%. Clothing, 500%. Steel, 200%. In these industries alone, the last decade has witnessed a jump of total import from $2 billion to $15 billion. Now, let's take a little look at the clothing industry in more detail. One of the most vulnerable to cheap imports, it still employs over 1 million workers. But if cheap imports keep on coming in, perhaps most of these jobs could be lost. Many clothing workers are divorced or single women who must support families on what are some of the lowest industry wages in the United States. For them, a continual flood of cheap imported textiles means real human hardship. Little wonder the entire philosophy of free trade is under attack. At the recent AFL-CIO meeting in Los Angeles, President George Meany referred to the very real possibility that the AFL-CIO will swing its lobbying machinery for 1978 behind new restrictive legislation. Added the 83-year-old union boss, a government trade policy predicated on old ideas on free trade is worse than a joke. It's a prescription for disaster. The answer is fair trade. Do unto others as they do to us. Barrier for barrier, closed door for closed door. Mr. Meany, therefore, is apparently not a bit worried about all-out trade war. He said we would do quite well for one simple fact, we have the market. He says we have the greatest market in the world right in this country. But there's another side to that story. Protectionism could be a cure worse than the disease. The idea of free trade is that each country produces what it is most naturally suited to produce. Take textiles, for example. The textile industry requires minimal skills and little capital. In countries where wages are 30 cents an hour or less, textiles can be produced very cheaply. The third world nations have argued persuasively that most clothing production should be moved out of the industrial world. This would provide cheaper products for the developed countries and more jobs for the third world. According to economic theory, free trade tends to mean generally lower prices. Not only do low-priced foreign goods become available to consumers, but domestic prices are held down because of the competition. Take the digital and liquid crystal watches. Several years ago, Swiss and Japanese watchmakers dominated that market while American companies struggled. Now, with the rise of the new technology, such as this watch, American companies are booming. Swiss watchmakers are looking for other work. Such shifts benefit the world economy by providing consumers lower prices and wider variety of goods. Had American watchmakers been really protected from Japanese and Swiss competition, we wouldn't have this watch today. Nobody wants to see plants shutting down or breadwinners losing jobs. Anyone with a spark of compassion would be moved to think, "There, but for the grace of God, go I." Yet in many cases, import competition emerges as less of a reason than an excuse. Sometimes it's our own government regulations, archaic work rules, excessive labor costs, or lack of management foresight, which is the real reason why American jobs are being lost. Take the jogging shoe. With the new jogging craze in the United States, athletic footwear has really taken off. But hardly any U.S. shoe manufacturers are getting rich on these shoes because they're mostly made in West Germany or Japan. As one Commerce Department expert reported, the whole American industry simply got in too late. The fact is that American shoe manufacturers were still producing the standard white tennis shoe because they hesitated to shut down equipment even when it was turning out a product that wasn't selling. The steel industry, during the late 1950s and early 60s, weakened itself by ignoring what was happening in the rest of the industrialized countries, which were building modern plants to cope with future steel-making needs. We continued to build open-hearth steel furnaces here, while countries abroad concentrated on the more modern basic oxygen furnaces. As a result, our steel industry is saddled with outmoded equipment and thus has higher production costs than foreign competition. However, protectionists argue that while consumer prices may be higher, if we increase our tax on imports, society will pay less for welfare, crime, and other costs related to unemployment. Furthermore, protectionism could jeopardize more jobs than it protects. While thousands of U.S. workers have lost their jobs because of imports, nearly 9 million workers, or about 10% of the whole labor force, earn their living from exports. In fact, the total costs of trade barriers are unbelievable. The New Republic magazine reports that if shoe tariffs were hiked as much as many protectionists would like, the price of preserving one job in the United States, paying the meager salary of $106 a week, would cost $31,000 in the first year when you add all the extra money consumers would have to pay. Trade provides competition, and competition holds down prices, said the UAW's president, Douglas Fraser, recently. We tried protectionism once before. We got Smoot-Hawley, the Depression, Hitler, and World War II. What happens to these jobs if foreign nations retaliate by increasing their own set of trade barriers? What would happen to small companies who buy cheap imports for their own use in order to stay competitive? There are jobs at stake in those businesses that depend on imported steel for their raw materials, just as there are jobs in the companies producing steel in the United States. But the worst thing is that protectionism may do more harm than it does good. Trade barriers mean rising prices and soaring inflation, which could make all of us a lot poorer. When nations who survive economically through trade have their backs against the wall, trade barriers turn into trade skirmishes, and trade skirmishes can turn into trade wars, and trade wars can turn into real war.
International trade is a vital concern. In conjunction with the information presented in this broadcast, the following booklet is offered. The Coming Trade War examines the international pressures created by continued economic imbalance. For your free copy, call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. This booklet will help you better understand world trade and how it affects regional and local issues. The Coming Trade War. It's one booklet you'll want to read in advance. Call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Pick up a telephone right now and dial the toll-free number 800-423-4444 and let me send you this free booklet on the coming trade war. You need to know how it will affect your home, your job, and where you live. How it affects the entirety of our economy, what it can mean politically, and whether or not real war, conventional or nuclear, is in the offing as a direct result of an invasion of foreign goods into the United States. The number for those in California, Alaska, and Hawaii is area 213-577-5225. The operators are waiting to take your call. Europe's own industries are especially vulnerable to slumps in foreign trade. When the dollar is low in the foreign exchange markets, for example, as it has been recently and is going down, American imports really tally up to much less from Europe. This means that Europe has a vested interest in a strong dollar, because a strong dollar means Europe can export more goods to us. This increases employment and economic growth. Conversely, a weak dollar means a slump in their export trade and economy. While a trade war would certainly hurt the United States, it would be devastating to Western Europe. These countries would be in desperate straits because the bulk of their economies are geared to exports. Both France and West Germany count about 25% of their gross national products in external trade. For a smaller country, like the Netherlands, foreign trade may account for more than half of all their foreign activity. In Europe, the dollar is perilously close to reaching another declining milestone, a ratio of 2 German marks to the dollar. At the beginning of this decade, the dollar was worth 4 German marks. Europeans, and especially the West Germans, are deeply worried about the sinking value of the U.S. dollar. And frankly, a French finance ministry official said recently, we find it increasingly intolerable that when the dollar is menaced, everybody rushes to its defense except the Americans themselves. Since early fall, the West European governments have bought up the equivalent of $30 billion American dollars in a forlorn attempt to stop the accelerating plunge of the American currency on world exchanges. By contrast, the United States itself has spent less than $500 million. In the same attempt. But there's a method to the United States madness. A cheaper dollar means the possibility of increased American exports to the continent, but it has its dangerous side effects as well. As the Wall Street Journal of December 19, 1977 reported from Bonn, the dollar has a strong psychological as well as strictly economic impact on Europeans. If the dollar goes much lower, West Germany says it won't be able to play its role as Europe's locomotive. Indeed, German officials say privately that if the dollar stays at its current level of about 2.14 marks, the German economy might not grow at all next year. They add that if the dollar falls further to 2 marks of the dollar, zero growth seems certain, and the rest of Europe could plunge into a recession. And I will tell you right here and now that if and when West Germany falls into a serious recession, you're going to find the screeching 90-degree turn to the right in West Germany and possibly other governments as well. It would seem that the experts are telling us that our economic problems here in this country will drastically affect Europe. Since the weakness of the dollar tells us about the health of our own economy, maybe we should look at the reasons why the dollar has been going down. First, there's the burdensome cost of imported fuel, $45 billion a year, which more than accounts for America's trade shortfall. On his trip to several foreign capitals early this year, President Carter was urged by the leaders of Saudi Arabia to take urgent measures to prop up the sagging dollar, which was threatening the value of the $60 billion the Saudis have tied up in U.S. reserves. President Carter, in a press conference last year, admitted that much of the U.S. deficit is due to $45 billion worth of oil being imported this year. Without our gigantic oil imports, this country would enjoy a trade surplus of about $15 billion. But the point is, we really are not going to reverse that trend. Secondly, the reason America's real trade surplus can't be made up is our $8 billion trade deficit with Japan. America accounts for more than half of Japan's $15 billion trade surplus. Virtually all the experts here and abroad believe that as long as the United States continues to run such large deficits in oil and in trade with Japan, the dollar will continue to slump in foreign exchange markets. The common market countries are also wrestling with their own huge $5 billion annual trade deficit with Japan. And in the Australasian area, New Zealand's Prime Minister Robert Muldoon warned that if Japan will not open its doors to more New Zealand beef and dairy products, his government will not continue to issue fishing licenses to Japanese ships operating in New Zealand waters. In words that revealed the acrid tone of the brewing international trade fight, Muldoon said, and I quote, "It is time that Japan is dragged, kicking and screaming, if necessary, into the modern international trade community." The point is that pressures are mounting in both the United States and Europe to erect great trade barriers to virtually fight a trade war against Japan. And if trade war develops, there will be no winners. Everyone will pay in unemployment and higher prices. Besides, what would Japan do if lack of foreign trade threatened her very economic survival? The last time that happened was just before World War II.
Plain Truth, the international publication of understanding. Plain Truth, the information you need in today's changing society. Plain Truth. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. For your free subscription to the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Pick up the telephone and dial a toll-free number, 800-423-4444, for this exciting issue of the Plain Truth magazine. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii, it is area 213-577-5225. It's yours free of charge if you'll pick up the telephone and dial 800-423-4444. In California, Alaska, and Hawaii, area 213-577-5225. Well, as you know so well, after World War II, Japan lay in ruins, its industry weak and impotent. As the post-war economic boom of the late 40s and early 50s got going, the Japanese government put up many trade barriers to protect Japanese industry as it was just getting back on its feet. Those were the days when made in Japan was still synonymous with cheap, tacky merchandise. But over the 1950s, companies like Mitsui, Mitsubishi, Toyota, and Nissan began to aggressively export higher quality goods. As the rest of the world began to enjoy these higher quality, less expensive goods from Japan, the Japanese economy grew by leaps and bounds. But there was one catch. As time went on and Japan's domestic industries became strong, the trade barriers didn't come down. Instead of gradually lowering its import restrictions as their economy grew, the Japanese government, under the prodding of the powerful economic cartels who were its main supporters, kept those barriers up. As we've already seen, it has now come to the point where the rest of the industrialized world is angry at Japan. But according to the Wall Street Journal, the Japanese are becoming increasingly sensitive about being cast as the villains in the growing trade Donnybrook. There are indications that many Japanese are becoming resentful of what they consider unwarranted, ill-conceived, and hypocritical attacks on their national integrity. These attacks were recently described as Jap-bashing. The journal further reports, a senior advisor to the Japanese government is saying, "We were pushed into a corner 40 years ago. It isn't good to see similar unfortunate and dangerous pressure being placed on us again." The Japanese insist that despite their admittedly stiff import restrictions, now is not the time, politically, that they can afford to throw open the doors to American products and endanger the markets of domestic manufacturers. The Japanese economy is in the throes of a slowdown. Bankruptcies are running at record levels. More than 1 million Japanese are out of work, with at least another million underemployed, kept on company payrolls performing trivial functions. Export drives have been the classic response to Japanese industry since World War II, when the domestic market went sour. And that is precisely what the Japanese have done this time. Stepped up their exports. And the thing which aggravates many American and European producers is that while Japan desperately needs free trade for everyone else, at home it's one of the most protectionistic countries in the industrialized world. Protectionism is so built into Japan's foreign trade approach that experts believe it will take years to overhaul it. In the area of quotas, for example, the United States has 7 categories, Canada, 5. The Benelux countries, 8. And the Japanese, 27. Japanese agriculture is so heavily protected, and Japanese farmers have such an influential role in national politics that it's extremely difficult to surmount the quotas, quarantines, and artificially high import price barriers. Beef import quotas are controlled by a cartel that sets prices up to 10 times the world price. Medium-grade hamburger retails in Tokyo for about $7 a pound. But the barriers go beyond official restrictions. The simplest import procedure requires 10 separate steps. Instead of simply inspecting invoices, perhaps spot-checking products, customs officers open every crate with a time-consuming thoroughness that also is costly. This causes delays in shipments plus storage charges. The tangle of regulations is so bad that by the time a Mustang II, for example, gets to its prescribed route through all the red tape and the countless middlemen, it winds up in Japan with a $12,000 price tag. As one American banker put it, Japan is all rebuilt now. They're up there in the majors, but they still want to play by little league rules when they come to bat. And so the Japanese are finding the pressure is mounting to take down their wall of trade barriers. But all this pressure is exacerbating Japanese sensitivities. Tadae Takubo, foreign editor of the government-affiliated GG Press of Japan, expresses fears from this angle. "I am pessimistic about the future of U.S.-Japan relations. We have only 3 ways to survive as a nation. One is to find natural resources in Japan, and of course that's virtually impossible because there are very few, if any. Another is to buy them from others, and the third is to get them without paying through violence. What we have been doing is making as much money as we can," he said, "and buying resources from other countries with that money. But what will we do when we can't do that any longer? It is possible we will again get emotional," he warns in this editorial in Japan. "We should not forget that it was the U.S. trade embargo which triggered World War II in the Pacific." Most Americans don't know that. Most Americans think what triggered World War II was Pearl Harbor. But what triggered Pearl Harbor was the fact that in a bicycle economy of virtually no natural resources, desperately desiring to survive on their tiny rocky island nation over there, the Japanese people at that time, though much smaller, on a far lesser scale, and with far less sophisticated weapons, and with far smaller potential for the entirety of the human race, found themselves with a 2.5-year survival rate in peacetime, based upon stored reserves in their own nation, and the very heightened use of bunker fuels and the like during wartime, a 1.5-year survival possibility. And so they went to war. And because of the Japanese inborn idea, dating back to the idea of Bushido, and that you dispense with an enemy with one blow, like the blow of karate, their idea was one tremendous blow at the U.S. fleet at Pearl Harbor, and so they did it. Most Americans in the textbooks, or those who are still alive that are my age and older, who remember Pearl Harbor, would say that the war in the Pacific began for no cause at all, except that Japan suddenly, in a sneak attack, attacked the United States. If they would very carefully study the entire history of the so-called Greater Southeast Asian Co-Prosperity Sphere, of heavy Japanese investments in the United States, of Japanese and American trade, of protectionism, of trade war, and finally that embargo, that freezing of assets and the closing of doors and a stopping of the flow of goods, they would find their reason for Pearl Harbor. And that is what this editorial pointed out. Once before, they went to war to keep those raw materials flowing in. When they couldn't buy them anymore, they simply took them. Now, an advisor to the Industrial Bank of Japan, Takashi Hosen, points out that Japan's pacifism is not deeply ingrained. There is always a danger that emotionalism can swing in the other direction. Well, at the end of the Second World War, the Japanese forced war militarism, even to the point of outlawing war as a recourse of the state in its own constitution. The goal was to become the world's number one trading nation, to become an economic, not a military, superpower. The nation's military defense was committed almost entirely into the province of the very nation which had brought the Japanese Empire to atomic submission, the United States. Since Japan did change its course 180 degrees 32 years ago, it could change again should the fabric of world trade, its chosen path to world power, collapse. So what is the situation now? For the moment, it would seem that the United States and Japan might temporarily keep from going for each other's economic jugular over protectionism. The two countries have agreed, for the time being, to try to even out their trade imbalances. In a recent communique, Japan has promised to move up the deadline for some tariff reductions and increase quotas on a number of products which the United States might be able to sell Japan. But will these Japanese concessions really alleviate growing tensions? The majority of Japanese trade barriers still remain. The United States is still importing more and more foreign oil, and the world economy continues to be sluggish. The fact is that many experts fear that all these factors could gel and create the kind of disastrous trade warfare that wrecked world economies in the 1930s. Willy Brandt, West German socialist leader and former chancellor, recently warned that unless the developed countries give up their trade protectionist policies, the world may be plunged into a depression as severe as the one in the 1930s. Brandt said that the poison of protectionism is especially gaining ground in the United States and in many parts of Europe. This should come as a surprise to no one. We have warned continually of the likelihood of both a remilitarized Japan, now armed with nuclear weapons, and a powerful united Europe under German domination that would ultimately stand apart from and in opposition to the United States. And the stage on the field of world trade is being set for a second time around for these occurrences right now.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.